You can't see me shaking. You can't see us shaking hands. So, let's see. Today's opening music was something from They Might Be Giants.
Dug up at the last minute and at great expense.
Okay, we are live, supposedly, December, what is it, 4th?
4th.
Right, 2004. And the Atheist Community of Austin is a non-profit educational organization promoting positive atheism and the separation of church and state. You know, we should actually practice negative atheism because you can't prove a negative. Or, no, maybe we should do that. Never mind. We have weekly meetings Sunday mornings at Hot Jumbo Bagel Shop at 307 West 5th Street at 10:30 a.m., except for the first Sunday of every month when we have our lecture series at 12 p.m. in the Mayor's Room of the Austin History Center. The bagel shop will be open tomorrow. Assuming that's correct. ACA board meetings take place at 10 o'clock, right before our regular meeting on the second Sunday of every month. These meetings are open to all ACA members, but you can only vote if you're on the board of directors.
Do we just want to go blah, blah, blah at this point?
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, sure, why not?
So, what's going on this week?
Oh, gosh.
I should introduce my dad. He's been on the show before, and he needs to get way closer to the microphone than he is.
Hi, folks.
Oh, that's, yeah, and I need to adjust the sound at the same time that I'm on the air. That's always exciting. Thanks, Jeff, for giving me advance notice, because you won't be here. the funny thing is that the last time Dad came on, a year or two ago, Jeff also was absent that day. So
how odd.
So as Dad
has he ever actually met Jeff?
We had three glasses.
Oh, good.
Yes. this is always exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand we're not actually broadcasting on the Atheist Network at the moment, but we're going to rectify that. And
okay.
Some people are managing to listen somehow.
Cool. Do we have anybody in the chat room? Have a full chat room compliment here?
We have a semi-full chat room.
Good.
Hi, everybody.
Hello. Should we go to news?
yeah, you go ahead.
Lacking anything else at the moment? The last 2 weeks has been rather shy of news. The most interesting stuff is... let's see, paralyzed woman walks after stem cell therapy. This is another application of science. All right. A South Korean woman paralyzed for 20 years is walking again after scientists say they repaired her damaged spine using stem cells derived from umbilical cord blood. Hwang Mai-soon, 37, had been...
Oh, is that a real name?
As far as I know. Had been bedridden since damaging her back in an accident 2 decades ago. Last week, her eyes glistened with tears as she walked again with the help of a walking frame at a press conference where South Korea researchers went public for the first time with the results of their stem cell therapy. They said it was the world's first publicized case in which a patient with spinal cord injuries had been successfully treated with stem cells from umbilical cord blood. Though they cautioned that more research was needed and verification from international experts was required, the South Korean researchers said Hwang's case could signal a leap forward in the treatment of spinal cord injuries. The use of stem cells from cord blood could also point a way to sidestep the ethical dispute over the controversial use of embryos in embryonic stem cell research. We have glimpsed a silver lining over the horizon, said Song Chang-hoon, a member of the research team and a professor at Chosun University's medical school in the southwestern city of Gwangju. We were all surprised at the fast improvements in the patient. Under TV lights and flashing cameras, Hwang stood up from her wheelchair and shuffled forward and back a few paces with the help of the frame at the press conference here on Thursday. This is already a miracle for me, she said. I never dreamed of getting to my feet again. Well, maybe the doctors had something to do with that. Medical research has shown stem cells can develop into replacement cells for damaged organs or body parts. Unlocking that potential could see cures for diseases that are at present incurable, or even see the body generate new organs to replace damaged or failing ones. So-called multipotent stem cells, those found in cord blood, are capable of forming a limited number of specialized cell types, unlike the more versatile, undifferentiated cells that are derived from embryos. However, these stem cells isolated from umbilical cord blood have emerged as an ethical and safe alternative to embryonic stem cells. Clinical trials with embryonic stem cells are believed to be years away because of the risks and ethical problems involved in the production of embryos, regarded as living humans by some people, for scientific use. In contrast, there is no ethical dimension when stem cells from umbilical cord blood are obtained, according to researchers. Additionally, umbilical cord blood stem cells trigger little immune response in the recipient, as embryonic stem cells have a tendency to form tumors when injected into animals or human beings. Okay. For the therapy, multipotent stem cells were isolated from umbilical cord blood, which had been frozen immediately after the birth of a baby and cultured for a period of time. These cells were directly injected to the damaged part of the spinal cord. Technical difficulties exist in isolating stem cells from frozen umbilical cord blood, finding cells with genes matching those of the recipient, and selecting the right place of the body to deliver the cells, said Han Hoon, president of HistoStem, a government-backed umbilical cord blood bank in Seoul.
Okay.
Sorry.
I don't know. That's
going overboard.
A little bit. Can I change the subject?
Change the subject,
something
please.
Something not news-related.
Okay.
Actually, there's a couple of things that are not news-related, and I was hoping to get a chance to discuss this with Jeff,
mm-hmm.
But it's related more directly to this show. We've had sort of an ongoing question for a while about whether we're really associated with the atheist community of Austin, and to what extent. And part of the reason that this is a question is because the Atheist Community of Austin is an officially nonprofit organization,
right?
Which means that we're not technically supposed to talk politics,
right?
Originally, we told our listeners that this group called the Center for Inquiry was coming, and we were going to jump on the bandwagon and be with them.
Mm-hmm.
But they not only failed to link up with the Atheist Community of Austin, but in fact failed to show up in Austin at all.
Right.
So Jeff has been all for just cutting all ties and striking out on our own. The only problem with that is that we archive shows, and that's a big chunk of bandwidth. And that costs a lot of money, and we don't want to give that up right now.
Right.
So we're considering becoming less political, particularly now that the election is over. But that kind of...
Right.
Yeah, I see you making a big face there, because that's a big part of what we do.
Yeah, what we talk about.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I've got a related thing to bring up, which is, Dad?
Yes.
When you were on before, and when you've listened in the past to the show, you mentioned that we spend an awful lot of time... talking about Christianity and saying this may not be so much about this show necessarily, but about the TV show, which you've also done. We spend an awful lot of time talking about Christianity and wasting time, so to speak, dealing with the basic boring stuff of Atheism 101 rather than just addressing atheists directly with what we call positive atheism.
Mm-hmm.
I think these things are sort of related in a way, because I'm not sure where I'm going with this, but it's sort of like right now, isn't it kind of inevitable that atheism and politics are going to be sort of linked? I mean, look at it this way. We've got a president of the United States who feels the need to pander to a whole bunch of extremely crazy people.
I'm going to suggest
that
this would be a good time to bring in this contrast to Europe that I wanted to talk about.
Okay, that would be great.
I have a selection I'd like to read. This is from a very recent book. It's called The United States of Europe.
I'd like to preface this. I actually mentioned on the show in the past that you are one of those people who are talking about leaving the country because of the election.
Yeah.
And we have, I think the three of us disagree with that sort of decision.
Well, let me.
I don't know what Dennis thinks.
Why don't I go on with
this? It's your choice.
Okay.
This is a selection from a very recent book by T.R. Reid, the former bureau chief in London for the Washington Post. The book is called The United States of Europe, The New Superpower, and the End of American Supremacy. By an interesting coincidence, it was published the day after Election Day. Here's a quote from that book. Well, the new Europe, and particularly the younger generation of Europeans, has drawn closer together because of this broadly shared pop culture. 21st century Europe has lost, or at least almost lost, one of its most powerful connections, which virtually defined the continent and its inhabitants for much of European history. For nearly 1,500 years, Europe was more or less synonymous with Christendom. From the 4th century AD, when the Roman Empire became a Christian empire, through the Holy Roman Empire, the Middle Ages, the Reformation, the Renaissance, the Industrial Revolution, and even through the wars of the 20th century, Europe was a devoutly Christian place and the global center of the Christian faith. The power of religious conviction spawned bloody battles, inspired timeless works of art, and spurred thousands of people to spend decades or centuries erecting the awesome cathedrals that mark all great European cities. Christmas, Easter, and the other great ceremonial days of the Christian calendar defined the European year. Until well into the last century, the majority of educated Europeans got their education, at least in part, in Christian schools. Europe's great art and architecture, music and literature were all deeply touched by the pervasive influence of the church. The faith created bonds that reached across all borders. But today, Western Europe, the home of the world's biggest religious denomination, the Roman Catholic Church, and the birthplace of most major Protestant faiths, has turned its back on religion. The Dutch sociologist Nan Kerk de Graaf, who studies faith and belief around the world, reports that 21st century Europe has one of the least religious populations in the world. A continent that is full of ancient churches and religious shrines is increasingly empty of practicing religion. In Britain, France, Germany, Holland, and Belgium, fewer than 10% of the population attend church as often as once a month. Only 12% of Britons describe themselves as active members of the Anglican Church. In Scandinavia, the handsome high-steepled churches that mark every city and village attract less than 3% of the people, and governments no longer subsidize the disestablished Lutheran church. In Amsterdam, the Dutch Reformed hierarchy is converting cathedrals into luxury apartments to pay its bills. In the former Soviet satellites east of the Iron Curtain, nobody has seen a need to restore many of the ancient churches that the Red Army turned into barracks or warehouses. I have attended church on Sunday mornings in dozens of European cities and villages.
Sitting in the author of the book.
Right. I'm still quoting. sitting in those marvelous old cathedrals, listening to the mighty organs echo in the vaulted ceilings, two things have always struck me. How beautiful those structures were, and how empty. Does it make any difference in daily life whether Europeans still believe in God or go to church? It is hard to argue that 21st century Europe is a less moral or caring society than the church-going United States. Yes, Americans put up huge billboards reading Love Thy Neighbor. But they murder and rape their neighbors at rates that would shock any European nation. Corruption in business and government seems equally prevalent on both sides of the Atlantic. Norwegians don't go to church much, but they give away 10 times as much per capita as Americans do in aid to poor countries. Indeed, every West European government devotes a considerably larger share of its budget to foreign aid than the United States does. Perhaps the most significant implication of the secularization of Europe is that it deepens the divide between Europeans and Americans. Depending on how the question is asked, up to 95% of Americans say they believe in God. In most of Europe, the figure is closer to 50%. The public religiosity that is a part and parcel of American life is rarely seen on the continent. The only televangelists on European screens are piped in via cable from Newport News in Houston. Europeans tend to be surprised or amused when U.S. politicians end the speech with the words, God bless America. Almost impossible to when they hear that, the intellectuals break out in a little smug smile, reported Jonathan Friedland, a columnist with London's Guardian newspaper. It's almost impossible to imagine a prime minister over here saying God bless Britain or God bless Sweden. When George W. Bush cited Holy Scripture and argued that going to war in Iraq was a straightforward matter of good against evil, demonstrators by the million took to the streets of Europe. Don't send us to fight religious wars, read a banner I saw at a demo in Salzburg.
Of course, those protests were almost completely dismissed by the American press.
Or not shown. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. At a time when many European leaders are vigorously promoting the notion that the United Europe should stand as a counterweight to American influence in the world, the different status of religious belief serves to heighten the notion that there is a basic difference of worldview on the opposite sides of the Atlantic.
Is that it?
Yeah.
So what I'm getting out of all that is that Europe used to be really, really religious like we are now.
Oh, yeah.
And then stopped. Whereas we used to, you know, be big on the whole separation of church and state thing, and then stopped.
I don't know that America has ever been less religiously inclined than they are now. I think our current leaders are emphasizing it more, but... And I think they're doing so, as you say, at the expense of separation of church and state.
Uh-huh.
I might mention that if there's one individual in our history who's most responsible for this separation of church and state, it would be Thomas Jefferson.
Exactly.
In the election of 1800, where Jefferson beat Adams, he was severely attacked in the press for his atheism. Of course, he didn't call himself an atheist. I think he may have called himself a deist.
Deist, yeah.
He was a Unitarian also, wasn't he?
I'm not sure about that. I think you might be thinking of Newton on that one.
No.
Okay, but in any case, the point that I'm making about that is that the popular press opposition to atheism goes back at least as far as our champion of separation of church and state.
Oh, yeah. Well, atheism has always been a dirty word.
Yeah, it has, but it seems like things have... I don't have the kind of historical perspective that you have. I'm not sure whether things are better or worse than at different points in our history. Like, for instance, earlier today I was asking you whether you lived through the 50s. You were really young in the 50s, but I was wondering whether, from a religious standpoint primarily, things are better or worse now than they were under the McCarthy reign of terror.
I guess I would say that in the 50s, if I remember correctly, there were three things that were so beyond the pale that you could never even mention them. One of them was communist.
Mm-hmm.
The other was atheist. And a third one was homosexual.
So,
yeah.
From that point of view, it kind of actually seems like things are a little better.
Well, they're better than the 50s. We've taken two steps forward. We've taken two steps forward. Now we're taking a step back.
Yeah, but it's not the same as taking two steps forward and three steps
right,
back.
Right, right.
Well, you know, at around the time 1964, maybe you could say that there was a high water mark for liberalism in the United States. That's the year when Lyndon Johnson just destroyed Barry Goldwater.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And yet at the same time, it was a turning point because I think probably the triumphant liberals of the time overdid it. They then launched into the civil rights movement of the 1960s. They drove away the entire South, and they motivated the right to begin the transformation that has led to the debacle of this year's election.
Right, that was also sort of when the breeding ground for the right-wing media that eventually led to Fox and Rush Limbaugh really kicked off, because they had decided that the press was unfair to their point of view.
Right.
And they decided, basically, the hell with accuracy.
Let's see how far we can get with lies.
Right.
And I think the result of this year's election, things like the Swift Boat ads have proved that you can lie as much as you like and get away with it in modern-day America.
That's right. Of course, here we are talking politics.
Yeah, it all boils down to that.
Yeah, which is why I was trying to say it's almost inevitable, isn't it? What are the rules for nonprofit corporations anyway? I mean, we can't tell
people who to vote for, but
right, but
we do
that. Well, we do. But isn't it? Can't we make it really obvious without coming out and saying it? Because it seems like churches do that all the time, and I realize that the way churches get cracked down on is getting looser and looser thanks to Bush.
Yeah.
Oh, well, excuse me. I didn't mean to say that name.
Could we declare ourselves a church?
Yeah, see, I don't think that would fly.
That wouldn't help.
We're not a real religion.
That wouldn't help. We still couldn't tell people. Then we'd be violating the separation of church and state.
which is sacrosanct for the right, yes?
Yeah, so you think that we're sort of better off than in the 50s in that one particular regard, even if we're not, even if we're moving in the wrong direction in a lot of other ways?
I think.
I mean, in
certainly
that way
things are very different from what they were in the 50s.
Uh-huh.
I think maybe this show is a fine example of the difference. Technology has provided us all with this kind of soapbox we can speak from without intervention from the big corporations that own the big media.
Right.
Well, you could just say that we're too small for them to pay attention to.
That's the thing. We're part of the background noise rather than the...
So soapbox is a good analogy.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, almost literally, huh? Coming back to the way that politics affect, I mean, you know, continuing with this idea of how politics affects atheists, I I printed off not a news story this week, but an opinion piece by someone in townhall.com, of all places. Mm-hmm. And if you've been there, you
I've
know...
I've never been to Town Hall.
That, I mean, that would be the soapbox for someone like Ann Coulter, for instance.
Oh, boy.
So we've got this guy named Doug Giles, who I've never heard of before. And here's what Doug had to say. He says, "Do you have a pit bull attitude?" is the title of this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm bringing this up because I think this seems sort of typical of the way that Christians are now flexing their political muscle that they feel like they've suddenly acquired thanks to the so-called mandate of the election. When you ask the average Joe today how he would describe a Christian, he's likely to come back with a characterization of someone who's intellectually weak, physically out of shape, economically unproductive, morally spineless, and a constant complainer, sort of an insipid spiritual poodle. As far as most Christians go, it seems as if courage, brain cells, and heroism are on the endangered species list. Okay, I'm going to stop right there.
Wow.
When I ask you how you would describe a Christian right now, is that what comes to mind?
Well, that's how I might. If you ask me to describe a fundamentalist, whack job Christian, yeah, that would be how I'd describe. But a Christian everyday. No, not at all.
That's not how I would describe a fundamentalist whack job Christian. I would describe, I mean, I don't think of somebody as sort of a poodle, as he puts it. I don't think of Christians as poodles. I think of them as crazy people who are grasping for power and taking whatever they can get and belligerently trying to intimidate everybody who doesn't agree with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, wouldn't you say?
It sounds accurate.
I think maybe maybe they're both right. Because, yes, there are some prominent Christian spokespeople who are very forthright of their opinions and very influential. And yet, on the other hand, I think there are plenty of poodles out there.
Okay.
There's not a single type. There's multiple types.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure you know where this is going.
No,
I don't.
Take us there.
None of the church founders ever intended this sad state of affairs. God intended his believers, especially Christian leaders, to be spiritual warriors.
I'm not even sure which side this guy is on yet.
Oh.
Yeah.
To be pit bulls who smash demonic strongholds, stand for truth, and bring life, light, and healing to this great planet.
I think I know which side he stands on, dude.
Yeah, I think so.
As I see it, a Christian without a pit bull attitude is a poodle Christian. What a terrible fate to be a poodle Christian. A pit bull Christian is a hero and a champion, braver than the bravest, one who laughs at difficulties, dangers, and death. The poodle Christian runs to his air-conditioned doghouse when it starts to get hot in the kitchen. Sweetie poodle Christians fear they might lose the curl in their hair if they get too close to the flame, too close to the front of the major spiritual and moral battles of the day.
This guy is afraid of losing the curl in his lip instead of in his hair.
Yeah. Therefore, the poodle Christians choose to hang out within the stained glass tinted windows of the church instead of going out in the real world to confront secular monsters.
Could we just change some of the wording here and talk about poodle atheists? shouldn't we encourage pit bull atheists?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I guess that's what it's going to take to respond to this kind of stuff.
Because
what this guy is saying is that Christians should be more tough, more of a pain in the ass, and get on people's case and verbally, you know, go bite them.
Yeah, just like the Jesus character teaches.
That guy. I'll jump to the end here. He basically lists a whole bunch of biblical figures.
Of course.
Is this the part where they say in the Bible that you should turn the other fist?
Yeah.
And I say to you, throw the other fist. Yes, that's...
Yeah. This guy's preaching.
My clash point is this. The church would be helped immensely if more pastors were to spiritually breed for ecclesiastical and cultural courage instead of the Sunday morning poodle show. Hey, pastor, charge your people with joining the fight for our society and discourage them from being dependent, spiritless little fiefies.
This is odd for a religion whose main purpose is to escape a just punishment. Bunch of cowards.
Yeah.
I mean, if God judges you should go to hell for being a sinner, then you should happily go to hell and not try to scurry behind the skirts of the Jesus character and escape. Yeah, you're just, you know, you're just punishment. Like escape your punishment, you know, like a man.
You know, there's one thing that concerns me about what you're saying. There are varieties of Christianity. I'm thinking here primarily of Calvinism, Reformed Protestantism, in which the Huguenots, for example, who believe in predestination.
All right.
Who argue that you're going to hell not because of any sin you committed, except inheriting the original sin for which Adam and Eve fell.
Right.
And that it, I mean, there are varieties of this religion which say that it is predestined for all time who is going to hell and who's going to heaven, and it has nothing to do with how good you are on earth.
Right, I've had conversations with those guys.
Yes, yes, Jonathan Edwards.
That must help your morals.
Sinners in the hands of an angry God.
You're a loathsome spider being held over the
pit of hell
by a God who hates you.
Yeah, this stuff seems to me like the ultimate perversion of religion.
Yeah. So it's not new.
It's institutionalized insanity, right.
Yes,
I mean, you know, they were writing like this in the 17th century. But it seems
18th century. Oh, well, it's both. Calvin goes back to, say, 1635 in his writings.
It seems to be on the rise, is what I'm saying. I've never had a view of Christians overall as wimps.
No.
I've had a view of them as, I mean, you know, by the principles of the religion, in a way, they ought to be wimps, but in a nice way, which is, you know, be nice to people.
You know, this reminds me of something else.
Never do that.
In the late 40s, when world Judaism was just recovering from the Holocaust, and when the State of Israel was established, there was a movement among the Jewish refugees from the Holocaust that, the theme was never again.
Right.
We must not let them do this to us again. We must turn into a new kind of Jew who is a strong soldier and who fights back. In the late 40s, that was almost an impossible dream. Of course, today, when you have the Israelis building a wall on Palestinian territory and progressively more hemming them in and bulldozing houses and terrorizing the Arabs of Gaza and the West Bank, it's almost a parody of this dream of the 40s. And, you know, there's something similar about this Christian writer that you just quoted from. I think, of course, there were times in Christian history when the Christians were the underdogs.
Yeah,
and yes, so I think maybe the moral of this is whoever gains the upper hand turns into the monster.
Yeah.
Because
once they got power, what was that called? Oh, yeah, the Dark Ages.
Let's see, how did they do that? Let's see what we can learn from it.
Frankly, at this moment, I'd rather be the monster than the one getting thrown to the lions. But I don't... You know, in another sense, I'd rather nobody be the monster.
Right.
I might even mention that in the Soviet Union, when the atheists gained the upper hand, nobody was able to outdo them as monsters.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, were they atheists?
Well, yeah, they were in the Soviet Union.
I mean, certainly Lenin and Stalin were atheists.
It was state-mandated atheism.
Which,
in a way, is the problem. State-mandating what people should believe.
I've had the opportunity to drive through the Russian countryside, through a lot of little villages, and in every little village is a bombed-out church. Stalin was very thorough about this.
Man.
Anything that conflicts with his power, yeah.
Right. Well, geez, there's a lot of belligerence on both sides. I mean, on all sides of the country right now, it seems like. And I'm not claiming to be not part of the problem.
Right.
I think we have a tone on this show of being pretty pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
But I just had a discussion this past week on the Motley Fool board where they were saying, you know, it's time to, recognize that religion is an outmoded way of thinking, which I agree with, and that if I had my way, I'd basically get rid of, this isn't me talking, but
right,
some
right.
other people. If I had my way, I'd get rid of all religion. If I could just, you know, make religion disappear and not let it come back, I would. And I had this sort of nice liberal Christian who I've mentioned in the past. I mean, I haven't mentioned her by name, but she's been involved in my arguments about the Euthyphro Project. She emailed me and said, you know, I'm sensing sort of a hostile tone shift in the way the atheists on this board talk. They're angrier now. You know, I tell my other Christian friends that all atheists want to do is be left alone to believe what they believe and not have government interference. But now it's starting to look like I'm wrong, she says.
It's a reaction.
It is. It's.
I mean, we're having our rights taken away. We can't be angry about that.
Well, yeah.
All right, then.
We can be angry. It's just how angry is it reasonable to be without becoming the scary ones?
Angry as you want to be. I mean,
yeah. Well, but we don't want to convey the image that we would be like Stalin if we got in power, right?
Right. Well, we're.
I mean,
we would be happy to be left alone.
Yeah.
They're not doing that.
Right.
So we're not happy.
Right.
There you go. What can we do? I mean,
they're pushing.
The only thing to do is to lie down and take it. The only alternative is to lie down and take it.
I guess I would say that in America today, atheists have become the whipping boy
mm-hmm.
in the same way that in previous generations, niggers have been the whipping boy.
Yeah.
Jews have been the whipping boy. Today, it doesn't matter in America what you believe as long as you
believe
some sort of nonsense.
Right.
If you believe nothing, then it's okay to bash you.
What I find amazing is you're allowed, you know, official people say things about atheists that... You know,
if they said it about Jews.
If they said it about blacks or Jews, they'd be
crucified.
Yeah, but no, it's okay to say anything you want about atheists. We got no morals. We got, we're a bunch of monsters. We're working for Satan. Blah blah blah. Say anything they want about us, and it's okay. Apparently,
right?
We're second class citizens. Already.
I think one of the things we've talked about in the past, actually, is that not just atheists, but liberal people in general,
mm-hmm.
and I guess even if we're not going to be a political show, which we haven't decided yet, it's still okay to have a liberal point of view, basically.
Right.
Tend to be the guys who try to see things from the other person's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And be nice and not angry. Poodles, this guy would say.
And those are the Christians who are incapable of doing that.
Right. And when we step out of that mold and start saying, hey, we don't like what you're doing here, we immediately get this unified chorus of voices saying, you're being intolerant to us.
Right.
How now, dare you disagree?
What I like is that, okay, what gets in the way of our, you know, they'll say, oh, you're intolerant. Oh, you think we're stupid. Oh, you think this and that, right?
Yeah.
But then again, they think that we deserve to be tortured forever in a lake of frickin' fire.
Right. So
I mean, I only think they're a little bit soft in the head. They think I deserve to be tortured forever. Who's?
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of a double standard thing here. A major double standard thing because conservatives talk about how when they're asked for their opinion, which I don't,
mm-hmm.
but they act like I did. They say, you know, you liberals lost this election because you're so angry. Look at Michael Moore. He's crazy.
We're angry.
But holy crap. And then they go on to say, why don't you guys just shut up and relax while we do whatever we want and stop opposing us?
Oh, gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Irony.
Gosh,
I said. Yes, absolutely. Oh, man. It's crazy.
So, yeah. Anyway.
I have another news story.
Okay.
This is a lot shorter.
All right.
It's about stem cells again.
Oddly enough.
Stem cell research and therapeutic cloning. The Australian government has instructed its delegates at the United Nations to support a U.S. and Costa Rican proposal to ban therapeutic cloning. According to one of the pioneers of stem cell research, Professor Irv Weissman of Stanford University, this will be the equivalent of having banned DNA technology in the 1970s. If that had happened, then a host of treatments now available would not exist. He argues that therapeutic cloning of cells, which allows diseases to be studied in ways never possible before, has the same potential. Professor Weissman argues that ideology and fundamentalism will allow hundreds of thousands of people to die who would have otherwise lived.
That's
yes,
bad.
Australian government is going through its own little fundamentalist takeover. I don't know if that includes New Zealand, for those interested in leaving this country because of its fundamentalist takeover, but I guess it's as good as mine.
I have
your research.
I think I have an explanation for why they're doing this.
Yeah.
See, I've put together some pieces of a puzzle about what the fundamentalists want for our society, and I think I've come to a tentative conclusion about why they're trying to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So let's put together
why they're outlawing stem cell research.
Why they're outlawing stem cell research, why they support the death penalty, why they cut funding for education, why they oppose abortion, why they oppose contraceptives. What I've figured out is that their real goal is that they want to maximize the throughput. Move them in and move them out. Mm-hmm. They want to have as many people be born as possible. They want to keep them from getting educated. And then they want them, in their desperation, to commit acts for which they can be put to death with a death penalty. And so they succeed in moving them in and moving them out. Mm-hmm. Now, what I haven't figured out is why they want this. But it's clear that this is what they're trying to achieve.
My theory is that they want to be perceived as right.
Uh-huh.
They want to be perceived as correct. They want to have the special knowledge. And science, education, reality stands in their way.
Uh-huh.
and they don't like it.
Yeah.
So if they can legislate it, they'll do that. I mean,
a large mass of poor and stupid people mm-hmm. have historically been the best base for for really old school religion mm-hmm. to survive.
But
thrive.
Everybody wants to feel like they're correct. And so they'll mass together and, you know, force reality to, you know, and attempt to legislate reality to say that they're correct.
Yeah.
It's crazy. That's my theory. They can't... the very existence of atheists, people who don't believe what they believe, is an insult to them.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Our very existence is an insult.
Well, of course, this is historically one of the main foundations of anti-Semitism over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that, for example, Jews in the Middle Ages wouldn't accept Christianity was one of the main reasons why people attacked them. So we're seeing an extension of that today to atheism.
But I suspect the reason that they're attacked is not because... is not because they have a different religion or something like that. I think the reason they're attacked is the Christians think that anybody who doesn't believe like they do thinks they're stupid.
Well, I'm not sure that's the issue, but I mean, I've read that part of the reasoning is Jesus was supposed to be king of the Jews.
Mm.
So when the Jews said, you know, we don't want him.
No.
You know, that
we didn't vote for him.
You don't vote for saviors?
You don't vote for saviors? So how'd you become savior then?
Actually, there was a very early attack on the Jews that was even in the Bible, where words were put into the Jews' mouth saying, it's our fault that we're going to execute him and let his blood be on our heads and mm-hmm. the heads of all our children. So take that, Jews.
It was a frame-up.
Whoa. Yeah. I forget what we were talking about, though.
Oh, I don't know where to go from here.
Yeah. I'm lost. We need Jeff.
Jeff is our guiding light.
No, Jeff.
Our savior.
He's our God. No, wait.
Oh, power to Jeff. Think he's listening to this?
I don't know.
Get well soon.
I insist. Okay, well, since we're talking about how moral Christians are,
yeah.
Guess what happened again in Texas?
Oh,
another
yeah.
execution?
No. Plano, Texas.
Yeah.
Oh, another...
disarmament. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Sorry.
Oh.
Did I screw you?
Plano, Texas, with a calm and dispassionate voice and a hymn playing in the background. Dina Schlosser confessed to the unthinkable, telling a 911 operator she'd cut off the arms of her baby girl. This always happens in Texas, right?
Yeah.
They're not cutting the arms off, but...
it's kind of...
There have been like three crazy women who
Christian
killed
wacko
their kids,
killing their kids.
It's been Christians in Texas every time, right?
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
Well...
Okay, I forget. We're
when you institutionalize insanity, you can expect this kind of stuff.
The woman was sitting in her living room covered with blood when police arrived Monday. Her nearly 11-month-old daughter lay fatally injured in a crib in a bedroom of the family's apartment in Plano. The child died shortly afterward in a nearby hospital. Police have charged the 35-year-old mother with capital murder, but declined to reveal where she is being held. Schlosser, with a history of postpartum depression, which also seems to be a component of the story,
yes, you would think,
has been investigated on child neglect allegations earlier this year. But Texas Child Protective Services had recently closed a 7-month investigation, concluding that Schlosser did not pose a risk to her children.
Mm.
Oops.
Now, you know...
The neighbor said she seemed to be a loving, attentive mother.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of interesting, you know, when some kid, you know, committed suicide...
Jack says, that's right, there's not enough yelling when Jeff's not around.
Yeah. But so-and-so committed suicide, and they searched his place and found D&D manuals and stuff like that and blamed it on, this horrible game, right? Do they now go through homes and see if anybody has a Bible?
No.
No, gosh.
They don't seem to make...
I bet that woman was a Christian, with a hymn playing in the background. It's funny, no mention of it in the article,
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, fine. If what you read and what you do is not an issue, then at least have the decency to have a single standard.
Yes. Well, of course, people will now rush to claim that she was not altogether...
Oh, she's not a true Christian. Right.
I hate reading stories like this.
Yeah.
We make light of them because they're so bad. Mm-hmm. That all you can do is just joke around, though.
Right.
Marvel.
Well, it's laugh or cry, and if you start...
Yeah, and crying isn't good
crying,
for you.
Crying, it might not stop, so...
We could call it a soap opera.
Let's see. So, what else do I have? I've got several more news stories.
Yeah?
Well,
I've been having all sorts of discussions on alt atheism, but they mostly boil down to, things I really shouldn't discuss if we're a nonprofit.
We're associated with a nonprofit organization.
Why?
It all boils down to
politics.
Yeah, politics and stuff.
You're a regular on alt atheism.
Yeah, yeah.
Has it gotten a whole lot more political now?
Well, of course, before the election, it was nothing but political spam, pretty much, and it was intense, and it's still going on pretty much, but it's died down a bit.
Are the political arguments coming from Christian people who are arguing that Republicans are godly, or are you getting a lot of right wing atheists too?
There are some
right-wing atheists.
Yes, there are such things as right-wing atheists. Yes, you have some of those there. It's bizarre.
I mean, we have a very small number in the atheist community of Austin.
The problem is, when they start arguing for their side, they start sounding like Christians, like fundamentalists.
Hmm.
It's weird.
Well...
They're not talking about God, but they're talking about, the government and stuff like that in the same way.
What's really weird is that when atheists start defending the right-wing side, they actually start defending even the religious stuff.
Mm-hmm. They do.
They don't
understand their own rights are being trampled.
No, it's like some sort of cognitive dissonance going on because if I'm a right-winger and all right-wingers are supposed to support religion, then...
I guess I support religion, yeah.
For instance,
Ed would come out and say, so you're saying Mike makes right. He goes, yeah. I couldn't believe it, so okay.
Are we talking libertarian? Is that what it is?
No, I don't think we've mentioned libertarian.
I don't know.
No, you didn't mention it, but I did.
A lot of libertarians, and I want to be cautious here because, Ashley Perrion has to listen to every show and because he's our archivist. And he's a strong libertarian. sorry, Ashley.
So what are you going to say?
He's beaten up a lot, but in our... I mean, no, he doesn't. He's a great guy. Well, not Ashley, but I think a lot of libertarians seem to take positions on a whole lot of things that are indistinguishable from Republicans.
Hmm. Me, I sort of... admittedly, I don't know the modern definition and the platforms of the libertarians, but it struck me as kind of, everybody would have to be really a lot more intelligent and more responsible than they are for libertarianism to work. Libertarian depends a lot on personal responsibility, and people aren't.
Well, playing libertarian's advocate, I know what the libertarians would say is, so you know better than the individual about what's good for them, so you must enforce your point of view on them, or something like that.
Hmm?
I'm not good at playing libertarian.
No, I didn't.
Sorry. No, but I was just going to give an example of a right-wing atheist who winds up talking like a Christian, which is basically an argument I had recently with somebody who said, you guys keep talking about how bad Christian fundamentalism is here, but why don't you ever complain about right-wing Islam, which is really bad?
No. Right.
You know, I think you're just biased or politically incorrect. politically correct, because you just look for every bad little thing that Christian right-wingers do.
Oh, boy.
And you never go after crazy Muslims. And so I posted a very ranty post in response.
Yes.
Saying,
all
right.
There you go. Angry.
All right, here you go. F the Middle East.
Yeah.
F the Taliban. F...
No bones about it. Let's be clear.
F religious terrorists. F theocracies. Okay, are you happy now? Because, when you say I don't complain enough about Islamic fundamentalists, it seems sort of like you're complaining that I don't complain enough about the Virginia sniper.
Right.
You know, I think you can take it for granted that I'm against shooting people at random.
Yeah, I'm against flying planes into buildings. Yeah, you know.
So I expect not to have to talk about it all the time to appease you.
They're grasping for any little straw, you know.
Right, and the reason about America and American fundamentalists is because, no, we're not like the Middle East, and I like it that way.
Yeah.
I want to keep it that way. And when I see it moving in the wrong direction, I don't think the appropriate response is to sit around and say, well, let's see how bad it will get. Maybe things
will turn around. It's this basic principle I keep hearing that if you point out the deficiencies of something, then you're against it.
Yes.
But if you just go with whatever it's about, then you're for it. You know, it's like, no. We point out deficiencies in our administration, in everything, because we want it to be improved. We see this as a problem that needs to be fixed to make things better.
Yeah,
we want improvement.
To take a geek analogy, I read an article by Larry Wall once, who invented the Perl language, and he said, Perl programmers seem to get very defensive when people say that there are things that are wrong with the language.
Yeah.
Like, it's a perfect language. You should use it for everything. What's wrong with you? And he said, I designed Perl, and there are things I just didn't design it to do. So go ahead.
Here you have it from the creator of the language.
It's better to use C++ for certain things.
It's even better to use Fortran. For something.
No, it's not. Fortran is terrible.
I programmed in Fortran.
Fortran 90 is the best scientific language.
I can see that.
Heretic!
but we digress.
Yeah. Dad, you think the country is beyond saving, though.
I wouldn't say that it's beyond saving, but I am getting progressively more pessimistic. If I come back to that book I quoted from earlier about the United States of Europe, let me touch on another issue that has been of growing concern lately. The United States has this massive budget deficit. It has an even more massive national debt. It has an enormous amount of personal debt in credit cards and such. Who's paying for all that?
It turns out that a very large amount of that debt is being paid for by foreign countries, such as Europe, Japan, and China. Why are they doing this? Since World War II, there's been one dominant currency in the world. They call it a reserve currency, and that is the dollar. There's been very little alternative for that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a new alternative, the euro, mm-hmm. which was introduced yes. Not quite 3 years ago, and in that time, it has increased in value relative to the dollar by about 50%, and the rate of increase is accelerating.
Oh, boy.
The reason why it's accelerating is precisely America's debt. Mm-hmm. Because since America's dollar is based on America's economy, if America's economy goes belly up, then it's going to drag a lot of the world's other economies with it. But you see, now there's an alternative. And that's the euro. The euro is based on a bigger gross domestic product. It's based on a larger population. It's based on a larger economy. And it's based on a better run economy, because the European economy does not pour huge amounts down the rat hole of defense spending.
Uh-huh.
In fact, they rely quite a lot on American defense spending to avoid doing that. Instead, they put their money into things like transportation, infrastructure, education, healthcare, pensions,
right.
Things that make life worth living better there. That's because they haven't been taken over by the extreme right the way the United States has.
Wait a minute. Here's a question.
Okay, but I'm almost done. Since the election, which is a very short time now, since that extremely tight election in which I might mention Social Security was not a prominent campaign issue.
Right.
Now, Bush and the Republicans are claiming that they have a mandate to change Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
The way they want to change it is to privatize it. And the problem with that is that the income from current employed people is what's used to pay benefits to the retiring people,
mm-hmm.
including the upcoming baby boom generation. So this leaves a hole of about $2 trillion if they turn that money toward private accounts. It seems to me that this might be the final straw that breaks the American economy.
Mm-hmm.
The way this will work, Paul Krugman of the New York Times describes this as a Wile E. Coyote moment. He says that at some point, the investors of the world, such as in Europe, Japan, and China, will make the decision that they would be safer putting their money into euros. What will happen is that then America, faced with this mountain of debt accumulated over the last, I don't know, 20 years, I think maybe since Reagan, this massive debt will then be faced with very steeply rising interest rates. People will no longer have the capacity to borrow. Everything will come screeching to a halt. We're going to have a train wreck of an economy.
Wow.
So you asked me whether and why I'm pessimistic. I think what's happened is that there's a divorce from reality in America. There's a substitution of faith for reality, and it's going to come back to haunt us.
Right, and just to bring this back, to an earlier topic, the reason that atheism, another reason that atheism is sort of inseparable from politics right now, is because we're supposed to be the ones who are connected to reality.
Right.
Instead of some kind of spiritual realm.
We're the reality based.
Yeah, we're on a reality trip.
Yeah.
Where if you believe something, then that makes it true.
I think I could sum up a great deal of what I see wrong with America today in the phrase magical thinking.
Oh, yeah.
Think about the popularity of Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings.
Harry Potter is great.
Not only that, Harry Potter is English.
It's fiction.
But,
and people know it's fiction.
Yes, but they don't understand that they don't understand that what Bush and his fellow Republicans are talking about is fiction.
Right, they don't understand that. Yeah.
And they're driving us into the ground, I think.
Yeah.
They are.
And in a very real sense, I think that there's that the great political divide right now is between people who think that you can figure things out by using reason and evidence,
mm-hmm.
and people who think that if you want something to be true, then it will be true.
Yes, and you listen to your inner voices.
Yeah. Until they tell you to cut your baby's arms off.
Oh, boy. Right.
Then we call them crazy.
By then it's too late.
Yeah.
That's reality based.
Reality.
We're lagging behind because we're reality based. The thing is, they can only support this house of fictional cards only so long.
And well, that's what
it has Paul to come Krugman, crashing down at some this, point because reality will reassert itself
this,
at some
this
point.
This Wile E. Coyote moment that Paul Krugman writes about. If there's anybody out there who is not familiar with the Roadrunner cartoons, Wile E. Coyote inadvertently runs off the cliff, and for a moment he doesn't realize it, and he looks down, and as soon as he recognizes that there's nothing under him, that's when he takes the plunge. I think maybe that's what's going to happen to the American economy.
Right. Reality catches up with him. Oy. Well, economies are notoriously difficult to predict, but who knows?
Who knows? We've got another incident of mixing church and state going on in Georgia this week.
Oh, yeah?
A high school principal apologized on Monday for reading a poem called The New School Prayer over the school's intercom, which brought complaints from some parents who said it violated the principle of separation of church and state. And good for them in Georgia.
Yeah.
Somebody having the guts to complain.
Oddly.
Of course, that's the only way we ever hear about
these stories. This is the thing. Mm-hmm. It's like we had somebody arguing, you know, yeah, we need to bring more religion into life, and, you know, into politics and all this stuff. And I go, okay, which sect of Christianity do you want to be the official religion of the United States?
Yeah.
Never got an answer. Whoa, he ditched that thread.
Just Christianity. Just
Sort of generic Christianity. No, sorry, one will take over. And all the other sects will then be second-class citizens, and we'll see how they like it.
Well, that was the hope in the 30 Years' War that killed about a quarter of the European population.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
that's what happens.
Yeah, so anyway, this high school principal, Tommy Kraft, said he didn't want to promote religion, but to provoke thought and discussion among students about the changing political climate in school when he read the poem the Tuesday before Thanksgiving break. The poem has been circulating on the internet since 1992, and we talked about it before.
Oh, really?
Yes. Let me refresh your memory. This is
how it
goes.
Okay.
Now I sit me down in school. I'm just going to read a little,
right.
more, little bit.
Yeah, please. We
now
can get
I
the gist.
Sit me down in school where praying is against the rules. went to trouble to look this up.
Right there, it's wrong.
Right. For this great nation under God finds mention of him very odd. If scripture now the class recites, it violates the Bill of Rights, and any time my head I bow becomes a federal matter now. So basically, you know, he was preaching how horrible it is that we can...
Right.
You know, that we can do all these awful things like pierce our noses and dress funny in school, but we can't have a school-mandated prayer. When we talked about this last, I actually read a poem which I plagiarized from our good friend John Hatton,
uh-huh.
who I met at the atheist...
Yes.
At the convention that we went to. He runs Shatnerology.com.
Right.
He had some hilarious stories about that. And his response to the prayer, using the same rhyme scheme, was, "Kids, please pause for Muslim Rebecca, who'd like to kneel and pray to Mecca. Now be quiet while Hare Krishna Jay intones his mantra in class today. Let's give time to Mormon Rod, who's ready to become a god. Catholic kids around the nation will get their transubstantiation." And so on and so on.
Genuflect.
Indeed, the parents would object from kids' prayers that are not correct, because Christian kids will be liable to find ideas not in the Bible.
Yep.
Then we'd see the sour grapes of those theocratic apes who want to loudly voice the prayers of any religion as long as it's theirs.
It's like that great Snickers commercial.
Which one?
There's a Snickers commercial way back where there was this football locker room, and they're having the prayer at the beginning. You know, all the football guys are down there having a prayer, right? Uh-huh. Then the priest gets up and leaves, and this rabbi comes in and starts doing his thing, right? And then the camera pans back, and you see this line of different figures going, you know, all these different religious things going back.
Wait, let me guess, then they say, going to
be here for a while?
Going to be here for a while?
Exactly.
That's cool.
I thought that was priceless.
Yeah.
When was that aired?
Oh, I don't know, but it went on for a while.
Must
I mean,
be pretty recent, because that's...
No, it was like 3, 4, or 5 years ago, I guess. Like that. Yeah.
Well, I thought those going to be here for a while commercials were only fairly recent.
No.
Well, what I'd like to say is I'm fine with the teacher and with the principal reading that poem in school, as long as he follows it up with John's poem.
Right.
I think that would be great.
Man. No, another
really
example
not.
Of Christians being incapable of putting themselves in anybody else's shoes.
Well, care to put in a word about Raymond Smullyan here?
Raymond Smullyan. What about him?
Wrong God.
Is that related?
Well, yes. It's the same idea.
I mean, okay. We had a discussion about Pascal's Wager by email.
Oh.
It was a brief discussion because we both agreed.
It's bogus.
Yeah, we were in violent reasons. Agreement.
Violent agreement. Well, something, and another thing, something about that article you wrote.
Yes.
Bugged me.
What, read?
Yeah, that
yeah.
you read.
Yes,
I'm sorry,
about
you
Europe?
Read.
About Europe.
Bugged me. About the intellectuals having that little smug smile.
Uh-huh.
I agree, they probably did. But, oh boy, over here, you say, you know, intellectual has the same appeal as the word atheist.
Or liberal.
Yeah, right. It's
yeah.
like,
yeah, you're
what is it?
Intellectual elite. You're some snob
How did we...
ivory tower.
Well, what they do in America today is that they take everybody who knows anything about anything, and they lump them into a special interest category, and that gives them the right to ignore them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I also blame... I blame the media. They always portray people who know stuff, like scientists or anybody like that, as smug bastards, who are usually the evil guys.
Yeah, that's
intellectual
what I said.
Intellectualism is portrayed as evil. It's like... What the fuck?
Yeah, when I talk about the media, I said something a couple months ago about how Fox News' slogan is fair and balanced, but not fair, balanced, and accurate.
Right.
They have this idea of fairness, which involves if you have one person saying one thing, then you should balance it with another person saying another thing, even if the other thing makes no sense.
Right.
So if you have a guy who says we landed on the moon,
then you
must put him on the show side by side with one of those crackpots who says we didn't.
Right.
And the moon is made of green cheese.
Yeah, you should have one of those too.
God.
And that's
yes, valid. I've argued with things like that on the net too. It's like,
People just don't understand what fairness means.
Hence my theory is that they want to be right. Regardless of any justification, they want to be right.
It's just easy to believe
what they say. What, I'm right, and that's it.
During the 1964 Goldwater campaign, there was a big bulletin board, I think it was in Atlantic City,
that
said, in your heart, you know he's right. They came back from the other side with, yes, extreme right.
Just believe.
Yeah. Or falling short of being right, they want to be put on an equal platform with people who are right.
So that
they can appear to be at least half right, each of them.
Mm-hmm. And this recent movie, what is it, Polar Express, isn't its big message just believe?
Yeah.
All the people who don't believe are portrayed as evil. It's like...
Yeah, believe as long as you believe something. And to quote the great W.C. Fields, I believe I'll have another drink.
No. Only believe what you can justify. We need critical thinking. We need critical thinking.
We do. Critical thinking. Good.
Hence, you know, the likes of James Randi and PsyCop and all those guys are really, in a large part, the core of the problem. There's no critical thinking going on. They're not the core of the problem. They're the core of the solution. Right. There's no critical thinking going on. If we can...
James Randi?
He's great.
I told you about him before. He's got a $1 million prize that he collected from various skeptics and things, which is up for anyone who can prove any kind of supernatural abilities in a scientifically controlled test.
Right. And scientifically controlled is kind of a misnomer. Randi doesn't claim that he's doing science. He's not a scientist, he's a magician.
He's a stage magician.
He knows
how to recognize fraud.
But he knows how to set up an experiment, and he knows how to look for fraud. And so, it's the greatest thing to shut up the woo-woo crowd, because, you know, he says, well, if you've got this special power, or if you can do this thing, if you can do therapeutic touch, if you can show me that, you know, you can show me that homeopathy works, you get $1 million.
Well, listen, I was just about to read you something about homeopathy.
Okay.
This is taken from...
how much time do we have?
We have
6 minutes.
We started late. I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
I need to start the music within a couple minutes.
Okay. This is taken from a weekly newsletter called "What's New" by Bob Park of the American Institute of Physics. There's an item here called "Homeopathy Demonstrators in Belgium Resort to Mass Suicide." You know this?
Yeah, we talked about that when it happened. It was great.
Okay, I'll read this.
It's an awesome thing.
A special report in the current issue of Skeptical Inquirer looks into the ultimate protest by a group of skeptics. They objected to a decision of the major health insurance companies in Belgium to begin covering the costs of homeopathy in response to popular demand. Depressed by the willingness of the insurance companies to encourage quackery, the 23 skeptics resigned themselves to committing mass suicide by drinking a cocktail of lethal poisons, including arsenic, snake venom, and deadly nightshade. to the honor of the homeopathists, to the horror of the homeopathists, they even increased the potency in true homeopathic fashion by preparing a 30C solution of the cocktail.
So that if I can sum that up,
He goes on and explains.
Well, yeah, but I think we're running out of time.
It's almost done.
Okay.
That means the cocktail was diluted one part per 100 and shaken, which was then repeated sequentially 30 times. All newspapers and TV stations were invited to watch the death agonies of the 23 deranged suicides, who included a number of prominent citizens and professors of medicine, and a few normal people armed only with common sense. The media coverage was excellent, but the suicide attempt was a failure.
Right. So homeopathy poison, yeah.
What is the claim of homeopathy? That if you put a tiny bit of good stuff in a whole bunch of water or whatever,
you put a substance in water, however concentrated you want, and then you start diluting it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you dilute it, and you dilute it to the point where it's unlikely that a single molecule of the substance will be in there.
Yeah, overwhelmingly unlikely. Yeah.
And somehow the water will remember the presence of the substance.
The essence.
The essence, and that will be what heals you or whatever.
So they did this with arsenic.
Yeah, sure.
The snake venom.
Unlikely any of them got a molecule of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Neutron,
but it should have been...
The more you dilute, the more powerful.
That's right. It should have killed them like that, you know.
Oh, my God. Thank goodness they're alive. Okay, I'm gonna say bye-bye.
Okay.
Thank you, guys, for pulling this show together.
I think it worked out okay.
And